Hello. Welcome to the Roll Together podcast. Thank you for joining us for these podcast versions of our streamed shows from Twitch. You can always find our schedule of upcoming shows at twitch.tv/RollTogetherRPG/schedule. Please do leave a review, and we look forward to adventuring together.
Hey everyone, welcome to Talk Together. Thank you for joining us for an evening of talking about Dungeons & Dragons. I am not David Shears, I am Chris Hislop. I'll be doing some hosting on this for the time being, and I'm very pleased to be here with our guest tonight. You can see here, Sean Smith. Hello, Sean.
Hello.
How are you?
Lovely. Yeah, lovely to see you.
You too, mate. How's life?
That's good. It's good, yeah. You know, few deadlines in work, but keeps it interesting, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. This is true. Anyway, Sean and I will be talking through some enticing questions and adventurous anecdotes. And what questions? Well, the dice will decide as we roll those bouncing across the screen, and you'll see them bouncing across our overlay here today. But before we get into that, let me tell you a bit about what we're doing. So this stream runs for about an hour, and we're delighted to be sponsored by Hero Forge, Ultra Pro, Elderwood Academy, and supported by D&D Beyond, Warriors of Waterdeep, and Level Up Dice. We're Roll Together RPG on all social medias if you want to find us there. Massive thank you to our D20 Club on Patreon. We're so thrilled you support us in what we do and allow us to make shows like this. Thank you so much. And also, if you're listening to us as a podcast, hello, that's fantastic. If you're watching us on Twitch and think, this would make a nice podcast for my morning run or doing the dishes or whatever, we're on most podcast providers. All of our shows will turn up there eventually, about 24 hours after release. And just search Roll Together RPG on your podcasting provider and we should be there. And if we're not, let us know and we will fix that problem immediately. Anyway, Sean, should we kick off with the dice roll?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it.
Let's do it. Right, here we go. Do-do-do-do-do. Okay. First roll is an 18. 18 means I ask you, who's the best villain you've ever faced in-game?
Okay. Yeah, an interesting one to kick off.
Start with the villains, why not?
Yeah. I'm a bit of a fan of villains as well. The number of times I find myself kind of rooting for a villain, if they've got a good enough motivation. So I'm going to go with a villain from a campaign that you run.
That's Caradan.
One of yours. Yeah,
Caradan. Hey, Caradan.
He was this kind of ever present, you know, we just hear kind of snippets about this villain. And, you know, our characters came from a place where he was. I think Caradan was they them. Were they or was
Caradan was he him? I started using. I personally started using he they around the time that I wrote Caradan, and I think some of that may have bled over a little. But I'm pretty sure I categorized him as he him.
Caradan was kind of the big bad. Our characters had heard only the worst about him. He, you know, turned this world inside out with his, you know, horrible magical experiments. And then we met him and found out actually he just was an idealist and had been kind of demonized. And that's kind of the thing that I love about villains is when it's kind of like, you know, it's like the Thanos thing. It's like, you know, not really a bad like concept, just a horrific way of getting there.
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that Infinity War is Thanos' story, that you're watching the villain achieve his goal, and almost like he's the hero of the piece, and that really, you're right, a good villain needs to have motivation, obviously, but also a good villain needs to be so convinced that they're right in their whatever. Caradan's such a, oh, that's years ago now, isn't it? It's like 2 years ago, a year ago. I'm not sure now. It was a home game.
Yeah, so. Well, pandemic. I'm trying to measure it by when the pandemic started.
True.
I think we were kind of, God, was it 2000? You might be right. It could be 2 years.
I'm not sure. I mean, just to explain for the people who weren't part of the home game and don't know anything about this, Caradan was the sort of main villain. And I say main villain, as Sean says, somewhat. Caradan wasn't really the villain of the whole piece at all. Caradan was the boogeyman of the whole piece. Caradan was the, you're the reason why all this happened, but not all of it was bad. Contextually, that was a homebrew world called Union, where the characters were all part of a militia of the army, effectively. And then it was lots of subgroups going off to do different things across the multiverse and taking lots of elements of classic Forgotten Realms and Greyhawk multiverse, but also adding a spin of my own on a lot of them. But the thing behind Caradan, more than anything else, was he believed there was a multiverse. He believed there was more than this isolated material plane that had no idea that there was anything multiversal due to a war and the gods shutting it off, which isn't too far removed from a lot of other settings, it must be said. I'm if anything, a copy artist. But the point of Caradan was he was an idealist. You're right, he wanted to go out and discover this multiverse and also to see what he could do, because he was a very powerful wizard. He was a caster, and I mean, I threw various different classes into his structure, but the idea was he made this universe is warforged, and yes, they contain the souls of dead people. It wasn't fantastic, but also it was an attempt to try and create life, because how did gods do it when we don't talk to them anymore? Like, it was an attempt to try and find ways around that sort of, if you're a super powerful magician and you're starting to be inventive, do you therefore necessarily become this Machiavellian nightmare? No, but the world might see you that way regardless. Like, I'm trying to think of other like good examples of where like Caradan's influence, but not actually Caradan, came through, because there were so many. Because the Warforged that joined each small party sort of had various parts of his character. And that whole town that he founded that was full of nasty wizards that were all backstabbing each other consistently, he wasn't there anymore. But and it fell apart when he left. Like, that was the whole point.
Exactly, and I guess that the metaphor I would kind of look at is like that of the three blind men feeling an elephant, and everyone gets a different perspective of what this thing is. You mentioned the different groups kind of doing their own thing. When we had, you know, a chat with everyone else from the groups, there were some people who wanted to kill him, still thought that, you know, he was this horrific person that needed to pay for what he'd done. Others, you know, who weren't so sure because they'd seen this kind of other side, or almost, you know, well, actually, this is what happens when he's missing, you know, when there's this power vacuum in the city he founded. Actually, there are worse people, and he was the kind of the glue that stopped them from doing these horrific experiments and stuff.
I also really wanted that idea of a villain of circumstance. You know, like, there was a war. He was instrumental in making sure that the war ended by winning it, but very much winning it for who we would term the good guys in this world, although, of course, everything's shades of grey and everything I write anyway. But, yeah, he'd managed it by creating this army of Warforged, and everyone going, oh, he's got an army of Warforged. Well, he must be super powerful. And then going, where do these come from? Was it convenience to use dead people to power them? Or was it magical happenstance and then going, I can't think of another solution and people are dying day by day. Is this worse? It was the kind of thing where we could have spent years unpicking everything that he had done. And I purposefully made sure that his presence was like portraits in places. And he had eye symbology tattooed on him for various reasons to do with different magic bits. But it also meant his eyes were everywhere. And we played on the idea of his eyes being everywhere. And you lot all steered into that. We're like, we're being watched. We know we're being watched. And when you got to the end and found that he'd been trapped, he was trapped in the astral sea in this sort of strange thing of his own design that was like a sort of demiplane, but lots of little ones stuck together, which I nicked relentlessly from Critical Role. I'm not going to lie about that at all. But that when you found him, he's in an observatory. He's in an observatory with a massive telescope, and around it are all of the Warforged he made's eyes, and he can see through them. He could the entire time, except that he didn't from the point when you started the adventure, because by that point he was already trapped by Mind Flayers, and he had the ability to, and if he were nefarious, of course he could do a lot with it. And would he have been nefarious? I'm going to go with maybe. I don't know, because it was never, I wanted him to be totally unable to do anything about the plot. And that was really nice. Yeah, God, that takes me back. Sean, that's a lovely, thank you. That's a memory lane. I mean, you and I DM for you a lot, so this does make sense that will come up quite a bit. Okay, twisting questions slightly, because that's a very homebrew thing. How about in the streams that we do? How about in Roll Together stuff?
Interesting. I guess, we've done a couple of streams, and the, I wouldn't say that Windfall and Waterdeep really had a BBEG as such. It was more kind of...
The thieves who nicked your stuff, or maybe the Feylord who,
orchestrated
it. Orchestrated to try and find a theatre company for his Feywild tour. I mean...
I guess... With, you know, in four episodes, it's difficult to explore in depth.
Yes.
And you know, flustered in the Feywild, we're actually mid recording. We're not. There's talk of a pink lady who may or may not.
I love this villain. You and I are both players in this, so it's gorgeous. Like, I have no idea what's going on, which is always excellent. Like, I have no idea what's going on. I can't quite suss it yet. Like, I'm pretty sure that someone in the town who we've met is secretly this person pulling all the threads on this WandaVision good place style hoodwinking. But I have no idea who it is. It could be literally anyone. There's no concrete clues. Or if there are, they're too subtle, which is great because it means we'll all be surprised.
It's kind of breadcrumbs at the moment, isn't it? We've got the pink paper. We've got... it's the hint of a villain, isn't it?
Okay. I had a theory from the last... I'm going to work out, because we record about a week in advance, and I don't think the reference I'm about to make people haven't seen it, so I can't make it yet. It's a shame. I had a moment in the last recording where I went, which you and I could talk about off camera, but yeah, there's a very definite, like, interesting moment in that.
Spoiler-free zone.
Spoiler-free zone, definitely. But yeah, catch up on Monday. My goodness, we're having a wonderful time in that game.
So with that in mind, I guess I'll go for the creature from Israel Roving House. Mostly because it was terrifying and we just did not want to face it.
Well, it's intentional. Israel was a pre-written adventure. It won a competition, and I'm going to embarrass myself now and say I can't remember. Mods, please help me. It was pre-written. It was won a competition, and we said we'd run it. And I can find that information, hopefully. Or the mods can, at least. But yeah, it came with a monster. And the written adventure was designed to be largely system agnostic, so it didn't have, like, the DC is this, the thing is that. It didn't have a stat block, and it intentionally didn't have a stat block. What it said is, if they get into physical confrontation with it, they will die. If they get into a physical altercation with it, have it happen somewhere else, it's a horror movie, it's the slasher, if they get close to it, they're dead. It's done. So I worked very hard to have it be this awful presence that you wouldn't want to get near, and also to discourage all of you from the classic D&D trope of it's a monster, we can kill it, because I want to give that impression that you could. None of you did the kind of what I expected of first round of initiative, I run up and I hit the thing, because what I wanted to do in those situations was basically have someone become, you know, very badly injured, or have someone become, like, psychically, like, broken by it, and you've suddenly got to drag around one of the party who needs to roll constant wisdom saving throws to maintain themselves. But we never got to that, because you all just went, nope, and just went away immediately.
Yep. Many hands. Nope. No, thank you.
It was a sort of moth lava thing, I think. God, it's a while ago as well now, isn't it?
It was only October, wasn't it? It was a kind of Halloween.
9 months?
Yeah.
I know, but Sean, I mean, we ran a lot of games, mate. Yes, I can't remember, but yeah, that was pretty... I mean, I wanted to make it sound awful as well. Like, I really steered into my... I think I said to you all before we started, this is a horror game. I want it to be a horror game. I'm going to steer into the grim and scary and unpleasant, which I try and avoid with the rest of the streams.
I think there's something about horror games, though. Like, you just... You need to get it out. Like, you can't just have this happy existence, because, you know, it's the dark times that show you how good they are. So yeah, sometimes you need to be scared out of your wits so that you know, oh yeah, no, generally I'm quite happy because I'm not being scared out of my wits by a weird lava moth creature thing.
I think it's, I like horror tropism. Like, I like in Baldur's Gate Framed, which is a while ago now, the villain was designed around the horror movie slasher figure. The whole point was that they were terrifying. that she would appear out of walls, because she could do that. She would stab people and do lots and lots and lots and lots of damage with a dagger. Again, it's a stat block that exists in game. It's a something of Bale, Death's Head of Bale. So it exists conceptually in the game already. And frankly, Ravenloft now has a relentless killer stat block, and it's amazing. But one of the abilities that it had was, if it gets dropped to zero hit points as a reaction, it can negate the hit, which is perfect for slasher movie villains, because they get thrown out of windows or get set on fire, and they run up, everyone runs away, and they reappear 10 minutes later and they're fine. And I really wanted that sense that this person is unkillable, this person is unstoppable, you need to avoid them until they just turn up again. And similarly with Gloomfalls on Baldur's Gate, the both Baldur's Gate games, I wanted that big vampire awfulness, necrotic rah, horror, but also I wanted that almost Van Helsing style scenery chewing, all the villains were scenery chewing nightmares in that. That was the whole intention, just people there to ramble like I do. I'm sorry, Sean, I've rambled quite a lot there. One writes oneself into things, doesn't one? Should we roll another dice? What do you think?
Yeah, let's go for another dice roll.
Right, what have we got? My mouse has gone to sleep. That's what we've got. There we go. We have... rolling. There it is. Right, we have an 8. 8. Cool. How do you feel about PvP?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Generally, I'm okay with it, but I don't do things by halves. I ran a game which was it was towards the beginning of lockdown. I was trying to think of how could I get as many of my friends playing D&D at one time as I could. You know, I wanted to try and just get everyone involved, and I thought, oh well, let's do some sort of tournament. So I had teams of two. You know, rolling for stats, you know, just try and oh, and everyone had like a uncommon magic item as well. I wanted to have this situation where people would be competing and, you know, just try and get people spectating and playing. And yeah, it turns out that running PvP is super stressful.
Yeah.
especially when, you know, you're rooting for both sides. So at least when you're doing a normal game of D&D and you're running a monster, the monster dies, you go, okay, well, they didn't kill any of my friends. You know, you're not necessarily trying for that. Obviously, you're trying because this is the story and it's got to be a challenge. But like, you're trying, but you're hoping for the low rolls. Whereas when you've got players facing off against each other, every little kind of rules foible becomes this thing where you've got you want to rule in the fairest way, and you can't do what you would normally do as a DM and say, okay, well, we'll come back to this so that we don't slow the game down. We'll go for the one that doesn't kill you. But you know, I did this tournament and had players who were doing definitely the right thing to do, pick on the wizard because they are the squishy one.
Absolutely.
But obviously took out the wizard before they even had a chance to do anything in the game, and that's not fun.
Yeah, battle royales are funny, aren't they? Because on the one hand, it makes sense that it should work because everyone's playing characters and now you're all just fighting each other. But D&D classes aren't designed like that.
No. I think the trouble is, the monsters are designed... Well, it's not a trouble. This is obviously how the game is designed. It's not designed for us to... You know, it's not Streets of... I was going to say Rage. That's not the one. Street Fighter. You know,
Streets of Rage covers it too, surely.
Streets of Rage is still cooperative, though, isn't it? I was thinking...
Yes.
Yeah. It's not Mortal Kombat. Like, the monsters are designed to be heavy in hit points with a few actions so that they will, you know, seem scary and take a while to beat.
Yes.
Whereas players are kind of designed the other way. You've got lots of different options, very few hit points, so that you start feeling the pinch sooner. So I guess if I were to ever do something like that again, for one thing, I would want someone to heavily dissuade me from it. but secondly, I would probably at the very least double hit points, because even at max, it's not enough.
Even doubling hit points, you have the same problem in that certain player abilities are awful in PvP style setups. Like, the classic example for me in PvP is the Druid Cleric problem. Both designed to be support caster healers and also have some battle ability. In a PvP setup, they will win. They just will, because they can heal themselves. They can heal themselves with bonus actions. They can heal others with bonus actions if they need to. Most of them have some kind of way to boost their healing of themselves. They can cast spells so things can't run away from them. And if you do get up close and personal, they can wear armor and they can hit you.
I tell you what turned out was the winning combination. It was paladins.
Yep, just, also burst damage. Yeah.
Paladins were easily the most common class in the tournament, and just dealing out piles of damage. We were running it at level 5 as well, so they had some hefty smites.
I suppose also PvP is technically short, isn't it? It's sort of... it wouldn't last long. It's not many... Like, D&D combat tends to last between 3 and 4 rounds, depending on the strength of the enemy. Mm. Whereas PvP... most players will only get to run a round or two before they're absolutely annihilated anyway, and then the rest will be doing like 10. Hmm. So paladins will have a massive decrease in value over time when the smites run out, but they'll kill all the other characters first.
Exactly. Yeah.
Emma in the background.
It's not a game which is designed for this.
Well, no, I think... But this is the point of the party system. This is why, like, D&D works best when it's a party, and it works best when the party's... I mean, you and I have talked about this before as a DM to player as well. Like, when I make characters for games that I play in, I often go with the most synergistic thing, because most parties have roles that you tick boxes on. There are the classic 5 roles, but there's also other sort of small detail roles that can feel, that can make things feel unbalanced really quickly. And in PvP, those disbalancing effects, like, lest we forget, a Circle of the Moon druid will have 3 times the hit points of every other character because of wild shape. If they're a high enough level druid, they can wild shape so often it becomes meaningless. Which also, if the critical role one, the big one that was for most people have seen, of course the druid one. It was almost a given from the start. They were level 20, wild shape every turn. Like, and rogues don't work in PvP, because how on earth do you say where you are when you don't say where you are, or you do say where you are and everyone just knows where you are, so it becomes meaningless. Yeah.
The battlefield plays a very large part of it as well. You know, you can try as much as you like. Either you're going to have people starting too far away from each other, and then your wizards and your rangers can get a few rounds in.
Yeah.
Or you have them too close, your wizard's running off while the barbarians, you know, hop on their tail. It taught me a lot about the game. But maybe don't plan for a 16 player 18.
Oh dear God. Yeah. I mean, Sean, you've been in games that I've run that have had parties of 8, 10, 15 at some points, like really, really big scale games, and I've regretted every single one of them and said I'm not doing it again, and then made the number slightly smaller and it's still not small enough. Like, you can't do it with more than like 8 people max. This doesn't work.
I run a homebrew game.
Oh yes, the one where you do rotating people.
Yeah, so it's we've 3 DMs. We're at around about 12 players at the moment, I think. Mm-hmm. People kind of join, drop out as their kind of schedules allow.
Of course.
But each DM will run a session, one session a month, and the players kind of give us their availability, and we'll work out when we can get everyone, at least one game. Some players obviously want to play more. Some players just are happy to get a little bit of D&D in their month, you know?
So it's, what's that kind of game called where players rotate in and out? There's a specific word for it. West Marches? Is that what it's called?
You're asking me.
I was asking Emma. Emma just said it's West Marches, where players rotate in and out and stuff like that. That is apparently quite a common way of playing, but I've not really done it much.
It's interesting, and we've, I guess the thing for me is, how do you keep the story going? When we run an adventure, it will typically be an adventuring party. It's kind of like your job's board. So the players are all part of a community, and they will, each session, their characters will have signed up to a job, and they will go out, they will do said job, and they will come back. And that's the format. Is you go out, you adventure, you come back. You don't have to worry too much about, you know, oh, we're trapped in a room and the session ends. It will generally be, I can't have you finishing in a room because you're next playing over here with these people, and they're not in the room.
DM to DM question, does that not feel like a selection of interconnected one-shots then?
It kind of does. Mm. And it's an interesting way to be planning games out.
Sure.
We do have threads that kind of tie in, and you know, characters that they want to revisit. But yeah, largely it is an excuse just to get people in a room rolling some dice.
Which is what D&D is all about anyway, yeah.
In a Zoom room, at least.
I mean, for now, what else can we do, hey?
No, it's I forget why I raised that.
Well, we were talking about PvP and about a number of players as well, and you were saying, because West Marches means you can rotate out a large number of
people. That's right.
Yeah.
We have had a couple of sessions where it's just been a day when more people have been free and wanted to play some D&D, so we've actually had kind of two DMs at the same time, which we've tried kind of alternating, you know, someone will give some description, the other one will, and we've also had kind of one is the lead DM telling the story, and then when combat happens, it will typically be, there is one over here and one over there. They're too far away for you to kind of run between. And we then split off into a sub room in the chat, and we'll have like, you know, four and four. That works quite nicely.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, you made the point earlier. I think that's the important thing, really, isn't it? It's about having people play together and have fun. Mm. And I mean, I love the fact that you've now got a home game that is, if people want to play like once every couple of months, and it's their little like dip of their toe in the water, I'm enjoying this. But you've got space to do that when the way I tend to run campaigns and stories and home games, that's not really possible. Like, someone's got to be pretty much playing minimum of once a month for probably a minimum of a year or two. And that can be quite a big ask of people. I get that.
It has its downsides and it has its upsides. Like the concept when we kind of started out was, we just want to give people who don't necessarily have the time or, you know, the schedule to be able to say, you know, I have these six people, you know, six people, including the DM.
Yep.
We do a doodle and we try and get in one or two sessions a month. That's not possible for everyone.
No.
So it's a good way of getting, you know, those people on irregular shifts, or just that ability to join a game. They, by now, we've been running it for almost a year. In fact, probably coming up to a year by the time we broadcast.
Yeah.
You know, over that year, people have met pretty much everyone in the group, so they know the other characters. They might not know them well enough to have, you know, intricate backstory, which is interwoven by a single DM. But that's one of the things we give up on, so that we can have as many people playing as and when they're able to.
It's about what's important to you, isn't it? And I think that's a really interesting note about what's important to you, because I bemoan the fact that I don't get to meet a huge number of new players, that I do meet new people and they get involved in ongoing campaigns quite a lot. That happens more often than not. Mm. But also that I play with the same people week in, week out. It's a large group of people now. It's 30, 40 odd people over the many, many different games and streams and all the rest of it. But it is like, I don't get to go to a convention, sit down and run a one-shot with someone. Also, it's not really what I like doing. And I've sort of DM'd myself into I really want to play with these people for the next 6 years corner, in a way. But I think I'd also struggle if I was doing a West Marches campaign with, no, there's rich, fulsome backstory that we're just not touching, and it would really annoy me. Can't have cake and eat it.
No, exactly. You choose kind of when you set up. And I do have that. Like, I run a game. We have played through Dragon and Ispire Peak. We're now into the additional content.
You and I were running Ispire Peak at the same time, weren't we?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun point. We would spend sessions before our other game talking about what we were currently doing in Ispire Peak and how we'd done things similarly but also very differently. Yeah. God, that was a time.
Places that we had prepared and the players don't go to because they provide more content than you need.
Yeah, of course.
It's a good fun one, and it's actually the first full campaign that I ever DM'd. I believe you recommended it to me, actually. It's
yes, because I believe, and personal taste, that it is a better starter campaign for new players than the starter adventure.
Yeah, Lost Mines of Phandelver.
Yeah, because Phandelver's, it's all right. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's... There's a bit of history there with how adventures used to be written by WotC, because there was a point where there were other ways that they were written involved. And I find that Phandelver relies a lot on players making certain decisions that they have to make. And if they don't make them, it doesn't happen. Whereas I Spy a Peak is... It's a video game. It's a jobs board. There are various jobs you can do. Those jobs introduce you to people. The people that you meet through that then become part of the wider adventure as you go on an adventure further. And there's there's 20s of locations that you can then go, well, they're going to go there and do that. And I might make them stop off there because I can make it on the way without breaking the map in any way, shape, or form. And you can start tying all these different threads together to make this very cohesive narrative of your own from a book. It's the way that the books have started to go recently, where they don't go, this is the line you must follow. It's not a railroad. It's more, here is the location. Here's all the things in that location. Here's how they all tie into each other. The Icewind Dale book is great for that. I'm currently running that as a home game. And it's fantastic for that because I'm pushing them in certain directions. Of course I am. But I know if they go there that it's all in the book and that there's loads of like detail. I will flesh it out as I, you know, arrive there with the players and make split-second decisions or think about it in advance a little bit. But it means that everything feels very like this is your sandbox. You can go and explore. There are little submissions for each town if they go to them. It all ties into some major plot points later. But those feel earned because of all the stuff they've picked up in the various other pieces. I think that's gorgeous. I really enjoy that more DMing-wise than railroading, which I really enjoy.
It's nice as well, because with kind of almost self-contained missions, they do have threads, but it means that you can kind of, take that.
Yeah, exactly.
Much, much nicer. I've tried weaving in some of the stuff from Lost Mines just because, it was something else I had access to.
Of course.
And trying to go, okay, well, I've put this in and now they've started following this thread, but I don't want this thread because this thread is not to do with what I'm trying to do.
Tie it back to that bit somehow. Yeah.
I've managed to kind of find another loose end elsewhere that tie that together and now if I follow, it's like placing the tracks down, but
yes,
as you're going.
Yeah. I'm the visual I always have at moments when I'm scrabbling is a strong word, but when I'm going, how am I going to direct this? Is Wallace and Gromit and the placing the track in front of the car as it moves, because it is very much that. It's
wrong trousers, kind of.
Yeah, as fast as you possibly can, because they're going to pick up and move down it, and you have to be ready for wherever they go. But with books written the way they are now, it's like someone's pre-prepared a whole section of track and just going, these three bits, okay, now we're good. And we're already shooting off another direction, which is really, really nice. I prefer that. You can tell it in looking at the books themselves as well. You can see that transition over time from those sort of railroad adventures to more like, yeah, there's a big plot going on, but there's all these things you can do. Like Out of the Abyss started having all of these optional bits you could do on the way to other bits that were just there for flavor and to go, isn't the Underdark fun? And that then transitioned into Avernus having quite a linear plot in many ways. But once you get to Avernus, it's more of a, well, here's Avernus, off you go. Like it became this sort of wherever you think you'll go at that point. You can see it happening, can't you? It's a good thing. Well, we'll see what the new ones like. The new Feywild ones coming out in a couple of weeks. Not long now. It's low-level adventure. It's low-level carnival. Looks quite cute.
Exciting.
Apparently it has references to the D&D cartoon from the 80s, which is kind of adorable.
That's a blast from the past.
Yeah, I haven't watched that in years. I can't even remember what happens in it. There was a unicorn that... There was a donkey that got a unicorn horn, right? That was...
I believe so. Yeah. Don't ask me too specific questions.
Well, I wouldn't know, would I?
Nothing more of a Thundercats and Brave Star. People sometimes remember Brave Star. Strength of the Bear.
Yeah, I remember that one. Captain Planet, obviously.
Yeah.
What was it called? Was it called Ironheart?
Ironheart.
There was a sort of medieval knight. I watched it in German because I grew up in Germany, and he was called Eisenherz, which is Ironheart, is what that means. And it was a Saturday morning serial, and it ran for years, and I watched it religiously every Saturday morning. But yeah, that was all sort of classic swords and sorcery, but more in the He-Man sort of set. Very, very medieval.
I came across one that had been kind of lost in the back of my memory for ages.
I remember you saying. Yes, I remember you saying.
that's one of mine that I've known about. Jason the Wheeled Warriors.
Yeah.
Was this delightful. I don't think they ever finished it, which is upsetting, because it was strongly linked to the Arthur and the Round Table. I believe there was a definitely a very kind of medieval style wizard character, even though it was definitely set in space. You know, you had these kind of mishmash things.
Oh yeah, it was like late 80s. I think it was biker mice from Mars and stuff that, like, let's face it, was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with a different creature.
I was actually going to say I stumbled across Thundar the Barbarian.
Oh, wow.
Which was post-apocalyptic world, but now everyone has magic.
Yeah, we are really showing our age here, but I do remember that. What was the other one I was just thinking of? There's another one that crossed my mind that was also exactly that sort of era and that sort of... Gargoyles.
Oh, yeah.
The Disney one. Because I had forgotten about it. I watched it as a kid. I completely forgot about it. And then at the start of the pandemic, obviously looking for things to do because my job disappeared. We got Disney Plus for various reasons, and then I realized Gargoyles, just watched the whole thing in like a day. It didn't take long. It was, oh yeah, all of this stuff. That's nice.
We're clearly very different, because when my wife and I got Disney Plus, one of the first series we started watching was Gummy Bears.
Okay, well, we got Disney Plus because my son was home a lot from school, obviously, and we wanted things to do. And we started watching all of the old Disney movies with him that he hadn't seen before. So we watched Little Mermaid and Peter Pan. And that was interesting as well. That was a proper blast from the past, things that he would never have watched. Like, absolutely never have, because it's too old. But we thoroughly enjoyed catching up on again. That was the start of the pandemic. It was a year and a half ago.
God. Crazy.
I know, right? That conversation made me feel extremely old, Sean, but there we go. Let's roll another dice and save ourselves and pretend we still have youth, shall we? Let's do that.
I think my youth is long gone.
No, you've had a shaved head since you were what, like mid-20s?
No, not quite mid-20s. It would have been early 30s.
Do you think so?
Okay. I'm positive, yeah. My 30th birthday, I remember definitely spending with my fiance, who tragically we lost to depression in 2016.
Yeah.
So it's one of those awful kind of life events that you
have a very definite connection. Yeah.
And I know explicitly. I she didn't want me to shave my head. I kept threatening about it because my hair was thinning and thinning and thinning.
But, yes, I've only ever known you with a shaved head, but that must be a couple of years after, I guess, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I did a lot of amateur theatre. Following losing Becky, threw myself into acting roles and. Basically anything where I could pretend to not be me for a bit. And largely that's, I think I might be answering one of these questions that we might have rolled.
No, we haven't. I've just realized we've gone full circle now, because I was at your wedding and your wife explicitly told me that you weren't allowed to shave your beard. So.
Yeah. My hair has gone full circle as well. It goes around. I was thinking this, I think it was only this morning, actually, because I don't know when the change happened from, me having a kind of shaved head and beard, when I went from that's Sean with a shaved head to that's Sean with a shaved beard. Now this is just, this is me, and this is the thing that can change.
You very rarely shave, from what I remember of time we've spent together over the last, what is it, 4 years or so?
It tends to be for roles. That's what it takes. If I'm in a show and, you know... So I was in Footloose and I trimmed down to just the goatee because I was playing a
teenager. Oh, I remember the goatee. I remember you looked Machiavellian. It was wonderful. Mmm, it was great.
That
must have been
about,
three or four years ago, though. It's been a long time ago now.
2017, yeah, 4 years.
Yeah.
Was it? I think it was 2017. Could have been 2018.
Long, but long time ago.
Yeah, a while ago.
Let's roll another dice. Thank you for sharing that. Let's roll again. Let's see what we've got. We already rolled it, didn't we? We did. It's an 18. We already had that. Let's roll another one. Right. There we go. We have... Okay. We have an 11.
11? Okay.
Sean, who is your favourite character? This needn't necessarily be yours. It could be another character of someone else that you've seen, or it could be your favourite character you've ever played.
I've played a lot of one shots in my time, so you know I've dabbled in a lot of classes. I've played a lot of different characters. I think I'm gonna I don't like this question.
Your favorite child, isn't it? It's very hard.
Yeah. It's exactly that.
Sorry, and you're picking your favorite cat.
I mean, they are my children.
But do you have a favourite cat? Probably a more serious question.
Precious.
It's with Pumpkin. Pumpkin's lovely.
Pumpkin is lovely, but he very much is a mummy's boy. And he's the one who gives me these that I have to hide. if you ever wonder why I never roll, you know, I mean, not that anyone rolls like this, but yeah. I think I'm going to go with Craven, who is another home game, another one run by Chris. Craven is a Kenku druid, largely inspired by the Skeksis from Dark Crystal. In fact, I'm pretty certain I 100% ripped off the
And yeah, I think so, but who cares?
he started out as I had it in my head that I wanted to play a druid, but I wanted to kind of turn it a bit on its head. So he's very much, and again, this kind of could have been a villain in the right circumstances kind of character, very much an eco warrior against civilization, was actually sent to Waterdeep by Malar to try and undermine the city and destroy everything. But in his head, that is a good thing because it's protecting nature. You know, the civilizations are, you know, cutting swathes of forest to build on and make their houses and stuff. So he was very much coming at it from that, like, this is wrong, the thing that you are doing, mm-hmm. and maybe not approaching it in the best way because he was very kind of underhanded and slightly sneaky. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I've been playing him for 2 years now, and
surely it's longer. It must be longer. We've been playing that campaign for...
Two and a bit. It's not 3 years, is it?
No, I think we passed the 2 year mark over Christmas, December this year. So I think we're now in the third year. Yeah.
So, I've been playing him for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I enjoy wearing his skin. He's this delightful kind of
character.
Kooky, doesn't have social graces, but also I just love messing around and, you know, wild shaping into a cat and sitting on one side of a door until someone opens it for me and they're not going through.
What that character does for you, and it captures that part of your personality where he is extremely silly, but he's not a comedy character. He's not a joke. He takes himself very seriously, but he knows how to have a good laugh and how to defuse a situation, how to do something slightly odd or peculiar, but it brings everything together. Yeah, I do really like Craven. Craven's a wonderful creation. It's little things like the fact that he wears a skull on top of his head, which is so gauche, but with a charisma of, what is it, 8? Like, of course he does. Like,
actually fairly good. He's got a fairly good deception, so I think the charisma's high-ish.
I can't remember what was low. Something about him was low early on, and that helped decide the fact that he was terrible at talking to people. I can't remember.
Probably the rolls.
Yeah, definitely. But it was the fact that, because you wear this skull, every time you wild shape, you are raven black in whatever form you have, but with a sort of skull demarcation over the head, which means that your wild shapes are always craven. There's a uniqueness to them that means they're always you. And that noise that you did, the Skaven thing that I'm pretty sure you copied it too, but who cares? Like, that means that that noise translates into every wild shape as well. So there's a cat going in the corner, or a little fly going flying around a room. So we always know it's you, and there's always your personality, Craven's personality, in whatever form. I really like that. It's a really nice touch to have that sort of through line for the character.
He's had a nice character progression as well.
Yes, which, he has. Yeah,
it's just... you know, he's gone from this person who would turn on his friends in a dime to someone who actually really values these friends who accept him for the weird goth bird man he is.
The transition that Craven went through, I'll try and explain this for the audience, because this campaign's been going for 2.5 years and we play almost religiously monthly, so it has a lot of... What Sharmini keeps count of the episode titles. Do you remember how far we are in? Is it season 3 episode?
Definitely season 3.
Episode 10 or 11 or something like that?
I was going to say it's about 13.
It might be. I mean, I genuinely don't know. I don't keep track like that. It's not how my brain works, Sharmini's brain. Sorry, for those who don't know, Sharmini is a comprehensive note taker to the point where every single thing she is in is written out note-wise so she can recap. It's just one of the things she does. But yes, you started off very much, like you said to me in the first episode, the first time we even started talking about the character, if there's a chance to betray the party, I might. Which is interesting to me, because I don't dislike PvP, but I want the party to be at least cohesive to a certain extent. Either the PvP can be discussion within the party, or even come to blows in the party, as long as there's a sense of we are all basically on the same side, right, kind of thing. I prefer that. But then you found reasons to engage with all of them. You made attachments with all of them in character. And then the one point where you thought, no, I'm going to be more valid to my god and do something important for Malar, everything, you turned everything on its head. It was that session when we were on holiday together playing and you summoned Malar into like a plant or something? Do you remember?
Yeah, I...
You cast plant growth.
It was plant growth, but it was very much kind of, no, I'm trying to reclaim the city.
And yeah. It didn't go the way you wanted it to. In character, you thought, this will be a nice way to get my god on side. And actually, nope, Malar's awful. And you brought this horrible thing on kind of the party as well. But then you all went and fought a god and defeated it. Well, an avatar thereof. And there were all these moments, like when you and Emma's paladin character, what a surprise, I know, internet, went off to look in the swamps that you were from, just as a little side recce thing, ended up fighting a chitin by yourselves, I think. It was like a horribly super-powered chitin, because it's me. that, again, made you question your faith as well. There were so many lovely arcs within that that made such a big difference. Mm. Yeah.
I've got to be honest, there were a few times, especially early on, where I very strongly considered casting Entangle, just in a square, deliberately with everyone, as a test for them.
Well, I mean, that would have been really interesting. I mean, with the way that party went as well, with a lot of... I mean, it's very cohesive now, but a lot of divided loyalties and trying to work out if everyone is on the same page and everyone's arcs have interwoven very nicely. There's even romantic subplots that have been going on for years. But at some point it's going to happen, all right? We know it's going to happen at some point. That's all we need. It is the ultimate will they, won't they?
I mean, you know, remains to be seen.
It's going to happen. At some point it's going to happen. It's got to wait for it to happen. But the fact that there were clearly, obviously, times where you had to choose between selfish and selfless, and the fact the character veered more and more and more towards selfless over time was just a really lovely development in character and changing gods and changing alignment. If we don't do alignment, but if we did, I think there would have been an alignment change in there as well. Yeah.
No, in my head, Craven's always been chaotic good. Like, he devoutly believes that he's good. Whether that is true or not is, you know, in other people's eyes.
I'm trying to think of the worst thing Craven's done, and there are some pretty bad things in there.
Yeah, he's a stinker.
Yeah, but there's also other stuff in there, like the really... Okay, this is a perfect example of DMing Sean. I'll give you this internet, it's a great story, and... After a mission, this is a party that are based in Waterdeep, and we started off playing Dragon Heist. That's how this all started off. I had the notion that Dragon Heist would be more fun if all four of the Dragon Heist villains were all trying to do the same thing at the same time. It was a nightmare. It was great fun, but it was a nightmare. And we did all of that over the course of, I'd say, about a year. Is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, everyone was enjoying the characters, and we went, well, let's expand from here. I didn't want to go into Dungeon of the Mad Mage because it didn't suit this party at all. They wanted to run the pub that they get in that adventure. They just wanted to run that forever. So... I instead started building in backstory stuff and just developed a whole homebrew campaign out of it. But yeah, during that whole process, they make quite a lot of money because the whole point of the adventure is you become great. You become, well, I was going to say Grey Hands, but the name's changed now. You become members of Force Grey and you start, like, the party becomes connected to the city as a whole. And I gave them money. And Craven as a character doesn't know what to do with money because Craven doesn't really want to buy things, and the concept of buying and owning things is a bit alien to him. So instead, Sean says to me, hey Chris, is there like an actors guild in town? Why did you want actors? Do you remember why you wanted actors?
That was because Craven hired someone to pretend to be him so that he didn't have to interact with the fans of False Grey.
That's right.
He could just be a squirrel and walk past them.
So you go to the Jester's Guild, which is the closest thing that I had. This is in the middle of a story where I haven't planned for this at all. He didn't tell me it was coming, so I was literally doing the da-da-da-da-da. Here's the Jester's Guild, here's the guy that runs the Jester's Guild, and suddenly Craven becomes this patron of the arts, giving all of his money to the Jester's Guild, and... they are so obviously fleecing you and you don't care. And you keep going, no, no, more money is fine. And keep handing over more and more money to them to do things, which has then led to loads of like random impersonators of other characters being randomly in places because of you doing this. It's been such good fun. That was something that you just set that little spark in completely selflessly in a gorgeous way and just gave it to me. And I went, now the world will react, and just started building this entire troop of... Why did you have... You're going to have to remind me of this. Why did you have actors to portray every member of the party at one point? What happened? Why did you need that?
It was because everyone had figured out that Torsine, who is the actress who, you know, auditioned well and got the role of Craven.
I think you'll find she wasn't the best Craven. The best Craven was the guy who was clearly up himself and you didn't like personally.
Yeah.
Most likely. She did the very well, and that was about it, I think.
I have a feeling it might have been a panel and we kind of came to an agreement. Everyone figured out that Torsine wasn't the real Craven because she was only ever around when no one else was. So Craven got it into his head that he needed to find actors to portray everyone while they're all not there. And then I think that's kind of evolved into should write a play about their adventures.
Because we had... I mean, this is classic of this party, by the way. Just to be clear, for internet, this party, there's a point during the... there's a point during Dragon Heist where you're supposed to be picking up the item that takes you to the Aboleth treasure, which I then did a lot more with. And there's supposed to be a party. This party took four episodes to... Yes, I've seen that the puppy's done a wee on the puppy pad. I'm very pleased. Internet, our puppy's being house trained. Yeah, he's doing very well. But yes, they took four episodes to plan this party. We spent... 12 hours planning the party in real time, in game, because the players kept on going, I should go and talk to Sons about that before we have the party. I should go and talk to Sons about that before we have the party, which meant all that build up. And then we had to have an incredible party / combat encounter / chase. And it paid off, but I had to work so hard to make the payoff good enough to warrant all of this build up. But yes, part of one of the things that came out another time was a whole session of us auditioning people to play the characters. It was a lot.
Including the guard captain, which is in no way going to come back and bite anyone.
Including the guard captain, who is also dating one of the party. Yes, that is true. Absolutely. He is not the best. He is a sorry, Emma plays in the campaign too. And no, he is not the best. He is a nightmare. When he started off, he was betraying you all to the Zentarum?
Zentarum?
Yes, yes, he was working for the Zentarum. But it turned out that he didn't know his... No, he knew, but it was... There was pressure. There was family pressure from his mother. That's right. Yeah. I play him as an asshole. I purposefully and categorically play him as rude, obnoxious, and oh. I play every toxic male thing I can think of, and yet people still like him. It's really depressing.
That probably says more about us than it says about you, to be fair.
Maybe. I don't know.
Time for another roll?
Yeah. We fit one more in, can't we? Yeah, definitely fit one more in. Right. Let's do it. Do it. There it goes. Ooh. Okay. Okay. It's a 4. It's the dinner party question. Who would you like to have at your ideal gaming table? Could be celebrities, famous people, people you play with and really like. Just people you watched on the internet.
I was thinking about this one. My gut reaction did go to my fiance who I miss and my wife is very understanding. She knows that she was a huge part of my life. But almost, you know, I kind of have to put a ring around that one because it's dangerous headspace. So I'm thinking more along kind of celebrities, my kind of wish list. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of kind of actors who are big, but like not home, you know, not home names, like home, what's that phrase? Home brands.
So B to D list celebrities, like not someone who you'd immediately see cast as the lead in a film, but like the second lead or
best. Or the lead in a B film.
Lead in a B film. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you know, my mind went to kind of Hank Azaria, Gary Oldman, who's doing a lot better for himself now. Yeah. I think though, I'd probably actually go with Alan Tudyk, of Firefly fame.
I mean, the fact that you said of Firefly fame says a lot about you, because Alan Tudyk's been in a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on. Particularly kind of doing quite well with the Disney animation at the moment.
Yes, he is. A lot of voices.
We watched Raya. Is it Raya and the Last Dragon?
Yes, yeah.
Recently. And I said to Steph, I said to my wife, I reckon that he's voicing the armadillo ox thing.
Of course he is.
He was. Yeah,
of course he was. He voiced the chicken in Moana. There's no lines, but he voiced the chicken in Moana. So, you know, it's Alan Tudyk. It's a special skill. He's also, what I will never forget him as, is Watt in Knight's Tale.
Yes.
Still, for some reason, one of my favourite films. It's years old, but I love it. Mm. I don't know why.
Great film.
Yeah.
I feel like the reason I kind of go with Alan rather than Hank Azaria, obviously Simpsons voice actor, yeah. Done all sorts of great, brilliant role in The Birdcage. I never wear these shorts, they make me fall down. That kind of, the Latino maid character.
The one he's in that pops into my head every single time is Mystery Men. Have you seen Mystery Men?
You love Mystery Men, the Blue Raja.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's Forks, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, internet, watch The Mystery Men if you haven't. I think it's just Mystery Men, not The Mystery Men, but it's gorgeous.
I think it's Mystery Men.
It's a terrible superhero film, and it's just amazing.
I mean, it's the best. It's got Kel from Kenan and Kel in it.
Yeah.
William H. Macy. Yeah, brilliant film.
Oh, The Shoveler. He's The Shoveler. Oh, yeah.
Janine Garofalo is the bowler.
That's right. And Ben Stiller's the lead. Yes.
God. Yeah, but you know, he's the A-list, so we're not going to talk about him. We want to talk about the B's.
Is Ben Stiller still A-list these days?
I mean, he's not This is a discussion for another time. The reason I go with Alan over Hank and Gary Oldman, I've actually met Alan Tudyk, so it wouldn't be a call out of the blue. I mean, it would, because, you know, it's not like we're besties.
Go on, but pick up that name drop. What happened?
He was at a con, and I paid £15 to get a signature on a thing.
Correct.
Of course.
Of course.
I feel like out of those kind of people that I've kind of named, he's probably the most likely to enjoy it. I feel like the others maybe are a bit more on the kind of jock side, kind of popular, maybe. I don't know.
Go on, who are the others?
Gary Oldman and Hank.
I don't think Gary Oldman's ever been described as a jock in his entire life.
but I don't know. I feel like you'd have been on that. Okay, I haven't done a lot of reading into his life. I've only watched him playing Dracula and, you know, Zorg.
Yeah. Oh my God, Zorg. Taking it back. Yeah. I don't know. I think Alan Tudyk would be really fun. Also, he does voices, which is always a good thing, a D&D thing. Voices are always fun.
Exactly.
So that's one. Who else is at the table?
Oh, I've got to pick an entire...
Why not? Is Alan Tudyk playing or DMing?
No, you know what? I think I'd want to DM.
Okay.
I think it would be people to play.
Cool.
Ooh, okay, well, in that case, let's go with Scarlett Johansson.
Right. Particular reason?
I think she's done a really great job of, making a name for herself. So she's probably on the A-list side, I think, if...
I mean, yeah, I think any Avengers on an A-list side these days.
Exactly. But then she's done these kind of quirky films. Like, I mean, you know, any Marvel film is going to have that geek fan base at first. Ghost in the Shell, reserve your, you know, criticisms of it. I think it's an enjoyable film. But it's one of those ones that's on the, like, you don't necessarily... I wouldn't necessarily have put that down as a... I'm trying to think of some other names. I'm clearly too obsessed with my Marvel and Avengers. You can tell how old I am now. My mind went... Jennifer Aniston. No, it's gone. Or Julia Roberts.
I mean, why not? These are all great actors. It'd be great fun.
Her name's gone from my head. Salt, Wanted, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Angelina Jolie. I can't see her doing Ghost in the Shell.
Well, she's about to do the Eternals, so, you know. She's an Avenger as well now, Sean. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not Avengers, the whole point is they're not, but she's part of a superhero team as well now. Yeah, but it's all Hollywood actors these days, isn't it? I mean, they're all superheroes to a certain extent now.
Now, mentioning Avengers, I feel like I'd probably go with Mark Ruffalo as well.
Easygoing,
and just feels like he's much more down to earth. I love any picture of Mark Ruffalo standing near other famous people, looking like a groupie. I was like,
the thing is, Mark Ruffalo, he already looks like the random dude next to all the other Avengers if he's not the Hulk, which is already gorgeous in and of itself. It's like, okay, there's an Avengers video game that Square Enix make. They couldn't use the facial likenesses, so they just had, you know, what looked like the actor's stunt doubles. And it's brilliant because you look at a scene where all five of them are standing and the Hulk's not the Hulk yet, it's just Dr. Bruce Banner. And it's, well, that's Captain America, clearly. That's okay, I see what they've done there. And who's that runner? It's Bruce. And Mark Ruffalo embodies that in real life, which is kind of why he was perfect casting in a way, which is great. Yeah.
And then I want to have a fourth person. This is gonna show up where I'm very much movies rather than kind of music. I would be hard pushed probably to name anyone in even the top 100 at the moment. I'm going to assume Adele, but even then, that's probably a dated reference.
I don't know. You're asking the wrong person. I guess culture is pretty low unless it's TV.
Yeah. So, TV is a good shout. What have I just been watching? Rewatching Red Dwarf. Yep, age again. another con story. Danny John Jules danced past me and I had no idea.
Oh, for sharing Danny John Jules stories, I once did a show, a Snu Wilson play I directed, and Snu Wilson's off. He's dead now, sadly. He died while we were in production, but he was a writer who wrote serious absurdism. It was absurdist, over-the-top laughter, and we took this Shakespeare riff parody and made it very sci-fi, and I've thrown lots of elements there, and he came to see it. Him and Alan Rickman both came to see it, because Alan Rickman knew Snu Wilson, and they both died very soon after each other. Mm-hmm. And Danny John Jules came as well, and one of the musical tracks was a Red Dwarf reference, and he was in the audience and just laughed louder than everyone else, because it was already supposed to be a joke reference, but then he had a good time, and he came round backstage afterwards and wanted to see who put the Red Dwarf reference in, because whoever you are, you're a legend. It's really nice.
Nice.
We're still Facebook friends, I think. It's odd.
Definitely not going to be...
I'll check that. I'm not sure.
you've got mutual friend, Danny John Jules. Yes.
Maybe. I have to check.
I think I'm going to go with Elliot Page.
Great.
Just feels like they would be a great... great person, really interesting story as well, lots of activism, I think that they've done a lot, and also massive fan of the X-Men. Magneto, possibly one of my favorite film villains, because of the kind of standing up for the oppressed, but and
in
also
the worst way possible.
Yeah. I mean, he lifted a bridge once, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, but Elliot Page playing Shadowcat in that was, I don't know, just possibly understated role, but I really thought that they did a great job at it.
To be fair, every role he's ever played, it's understated, because that's kind of his bag, and it makes sense that it would be, but also... as we've said on these things before, and in chat this before, D&D has become a really good place for marginalised voices. And to have the ability to tell stories in a way that people... There's very few gatekeepers in D&D, because you can sit down with friends and start telling stories if you want to. So that means you can tell stories in a way that... in last week's interview, Sam pointed out that we always get the same four trans storylines and two of them are the same. Like, that's just what happens in movies because of gatekeeping and money, whereas in D&D and in streaming, do what you like. So, yeah, have a lot of fun with that. I can see that. Good table. Very interesting table. Thank you for that. Let's wrap things up. Thank you so much, Sean, for chatting today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So thank you for joining us. Chat, thank you for being part of the show. If you enjoyed us, we stream every Saturday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. GMT. We're currently shaking things up on the Talk Together front, so you'll probably see some new hosts relatively soon, some new ideas of how to do things, but... you'll see that all floating around relatively soon. If you want to see our stream D&D games, which we mentioned quite a bit today, you can watch them on Mondays and Tuesdays at 6 p.m. GMT, or BST at the moment, we're still in the summer. We're currently running Flustered in the Feywild, which Sean and I are both in, on Mondays. Next Monday sees us... Where do we go to? Oh, we're just fighting scarecrows. We're just running away from scarecrows right now, aren't we? Yeah, that's the next
bit. Sounds about right.
No. So join us for running away from scarecrows. That's what's happening right now. And on Tuesdays, we're currently streaming Andor, which is run by Breedo, which is a horror-themed game set in the far north of Faerun. So check both of those out, 6 p.m. British summer time. All of our shows stream at twitch.tv/RollTogetherRPG. You can find them on youtube.com/RollTogetherRPG, or find them as podcasts by searching for RollTogetherRPG in your favorite podcast provider. So whichever one of those you are currently enjoying this in, well done. The other two are also available. Splendid. Many thanks again to our D20 Club on Patreon. Couldn't do any of this without you. Thank you so much for being part of this. Thank you to all our sponsors and supporters for letting us do what we do. And as David likes to say, keep it classy at the table, folks. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.